gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, you know what, Chris, I'm still getting the hang of the whole technical thing here in New York on the Stephanie Miller Bicoastal Express. I have a phone message. Can we just, let me just check that real quick before we start.
Hey,
I know we have...
it's Tiger. Ooh. I need you to do me a huge favor. Can you please take your name off your phone? My wife went through my phone and maybe call you.
Oh, yikes.
If you can, please take your name off that and... just have it as a number on the voicemail. Just have it as your telephone number. That's it. Okay, yeah, do this for me.
Okay.
Do it quickly. All right, bye.
Oh, boy.
Writing that down. Whew, that was my second big oopsie, Chris. I locked myself out of my apartment yesterday.
What?
Here in New York.
Oh.
We'll get to that story in just a... I've had quite a night. I've been up since... I don't even know. I was on MSNBC in the middle of the night. It is the Stephanie Miller Show, bi-coastal experiment is what we'll call it. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Chris LeMoy. Voice deity, Jim Ward. Surly associate producer, Rebecca Baker. Or me, Stephanie Miller. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. We have a jam-packed show. But first, let's dive right into the president's big speech last night with our favorite rockin' congresswoman, Jan Schakowsky from the great state of Illinois. Good morning, congresswoman.
How are you, Stephanie?
I am not as good as you. You are sort of A-team, so you're the people they go to right after the speech. I was on, I was almost in the prison documentaries on MSNBC last night. I was on almost at 1 in the morning Eastern time.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, I was just watching and contemplating how to react to a president that I love very much, want to succeed, but don't really, can't really support the position that he took.
You know, I was thinking of you last night. I know Dick Durbin, who is also obviously a huge fan of the president's, is, you know, one of his very original supporters, also there. And I think for the first time ever, Dick Durbin said, "I'm going to have to think about this and get back to you." I mean, it is really a tough one. I mean, you know me. I guess, you know, what I said is, I just want to give the president the benefit of the doubt. I think that, you know, as I've said many times, I think this is just another giant mess of the Bush administration's that he has to clean up. And, I mean, he did say this, didn't he, campaigning, that he was going to, you know, finish the job in Afghanistan. It's not necessarily something shocking, is it?
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't a surprise. And you're absolutely right that the disaster has been created over the last 8 years of the Bush administration, where there was complete neglect of Afghanistan. But now, 8 years later, looking at the situation, it's hard for me to see what is really the vital national interest that the president talks about, because with only 100 or less of al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and their capacity really to be anywhere in the world, they are an international terrorist organization in Yemen, in Somalia, which he even referred to, and the problem, as I see it, actually being more across the border, or the dilemma actually across the border in Pakistan. I don't see how increasing our military footprint in Afghanistan actually does make us safer.
Well, you know, he did address the Vietnam analogy head on, didn't he? I mean, he did say, look, they attacked us, 9/11. And, you know, obviously, I just think with the Senate report, Congresswoman, on Tora Bora, you know, I said this last night, that it just, I guess you and I knew this, but just how really disastrously incompetent the Bush administration was, you know, and so now... I agree with you that I'm not sure what exactly the right strategy or what the right thing is to do, but I mean, he did make that point that it's not exactly an apt historical analogy. He also addressed the Soviet thing too, didn't he?
He did, although, you know, talking about a cancer spreading, gets to our what are we trying to do then? Prevent something from happening that isn't a problem right now? Are we talking then preemptive? It doesn't feel to me like we're addressing head-on a problem that exists today, 8 years later, which I think is the problems in nuclear Pakistan, which is, Ron Suskind was on MSNBC after the speech, and he said Osama bin Laden has twice the popularity in Pakistan as Zardari, the president.
Mm-hmm.
That was really a scary thought to thought to me, and so I really have to ask, what essentially, I still don't grasp totally the mission in Afghanistan and how our presence there with increased troops is going to somehow increase our either security in the region or our own national security.
Mm-hmm. What do you think in terms of being a woman? I mean, I said this last night. I said, I'm not a, being a liberal, I'm not a fan of war, but being a woman, not really a fan of the Taliban. Is there a human rights issue here?
That we've created.
Again, when I say we, I mean George Bush created, yet another disaster in Afghanistan. That do we have a moral obligation?
Well, that's a huge complicating factor for me, no question. I was in Afghanistan in October, and I brought back a burqa, one of those sky blue, a color I used to love, and now it gives me the willies. Anyway, this sky blue burqa with this tiny screened area. Have you ever up close looked at one, Stephanie?
I have not. I've seen women on the street, but not,
I put it on, and it's the most claustrophobic feeling. You have no peripheral vision, and you're looking through a very dense screen. That's your world view.
Yeah.
That is what about maybe a quarter of the women are wearing now. But were the Taliban in control, it would be 100% of the women. That would be the law. They would be beaten on the street as they were before 2001. But now I think it's really more of a political solution, because the Taliban are fighting us, and they're fighting the NATO forces. They're fighting the outside, not so much the government of Afghanistan as they are fighting the foreign troops that are there. There has to be some sort of a political solution. Can the United States make those kinds of deals? Doesn't it have to be the government of Afghanistan that's going to have to make those deals with the Taliban, or develop the firepower in order to defeat them? I agree that we shouldn't just immediately pull out, but I think we've been trying to train the Afghan army that's purported to be, empire killers. They're supposed to be so fierce. Come on, guys, get up and fight on your own to protect your own government.
Mm-hmm. When you hear similar things, the stand up and stand down, do you get that you're the hair in the back of your neck stands up and it reminds you of Iraq? It's like, oh no, is this mission creep or is it, that's the thing. I mean, I think that I give the president probably a lot of benefit of the doubt because he's not George Bush, because, I think that, is there something to be said for the same thing he said about Iraq, that we have to be as careful getting out as we were careless getting in? I don't think any of us want to see little girls getting, acid thrown in their face to, trying to go to school. I think that again, this is not a problem President Obama created, but it's one that he has to solve.
Yeah, although, Afghanistan is one of the most misogynistic countries in the world, even under the Karzai government, where now the law was changed. Men aren't allowed to rape their wives, but they can starve them in order to get them to be sexually compliant. So that's a big improvement, right?
No.
This is not going to be a haven for women regardless. There's no question about it. And the kind of, with 15% literacy among women, which is what it is, only 30% among men. I mean, Stephanie, if you go there, this is not like the last century or the century before. This is something that you think your image of the Middle Ages. In Afghanistan.
Well, that's how we know we're a progressive country, Congresswoman, because we women starve ourselves.
God.
Of our own accord. What? All right. I've spent too much time in Hollywood in Manhattan. All right. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, always great to get your take on things. I mean, are you at least heartened that, you know, he gave a timeline? Because I really don't get the right-wing argument on no timeline. It's like, are we saying winning is staying forever? Is that winning?
Well, that's what they seem to be saying, that this would be a war without end, and that we, you know, this business of signaling an end is somehow, you know, making it more dangerous. I don't get that. But what I also didn't hear, I heard the beginning of a withdrawal, but I didn't hear an end date. There was no end date. And I'm concerned if July of 2011 things aren't going well, then what? Do we rethink getting out altogether? I'm not comfortable with this at all.
Yep, I hear you. Well, it's a stay tuned situation. Congresswoman
Jan Schakowsky. Is there anything the people in Congress can do to maybe stop it or steer this in a different direction?
Well, there's a discussion about the money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Russ Feingold is saying, right? He's saying there's a lot we can do.
Well, he's saying just stop the money altogether. But the other angle is that we should pay for it, which is a discussion that can be held separately as well. And, you know, are the American people willing to pay another $30 billion for 1 year of a war in Afghanistan, given our situation right now?
Don't you love all the screaming on paying for health care, something the American people have desperately needed for decades, and now we're screaming, pay for the war? What are you talking about? We don't put that in the regular budget.
Maybe if it became a line item in people's paychecks, people would pay attention to it.
Yeah, a little war charge, I absolutely think that the money issue is going to be, I don't know if it's going to be a showstopper, but it's certainly going to make people think about whether this is where we want to spend our money right now.
Well, Congresswoman, we are problem solvers, if nothing else, here on the Stephanie Miller Show. See, if you, Chris is right, if you saw that on your paycheck, you would think, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely.
I'll say it again.
Nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of the great state of Illinois, thanks so much for taking time
for us.
Stephanie. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
There she goes.
Hooray.
There she goes.
See, I got a question in there.
Oh, Skippy, you get a gold star.
Oh,
all right.
Yay.
20 minutes after the hour. After her stunning debut yesterday, Surly Associate Producer Rebecca Baker returns next. I will discuss the various calamities that are going on in our little bicoastal world.
Oh, boy.
And I have a Rachel Maddow story. I have a hanging out with Rachel Maddow story at MSNBC last night.
And it has nothing to do with Meredith Baxter.
Okay. Do you have to get me get to that joke? I have to get to it before anyone else does.
Okay.
Meredith Baxter, Bernie, you know. The actress, apparently,
Alex P. Keaton's mom on Family Ties.
Yes, will announce that she's a lesbian today.
Yes.
So I need to be the first to say that Bridget loves Bridget. Bridget doesn't love Bernie. Bridget loves Bridget because nobody take that. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Wow! Yes, I love it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 24 minutes after the hour. The Dow has climbed, the stocks have climbed to a 14-month high. Wow.
Holy crap.
1-800, it must be because I came to New York. 1-800-STEPH-1 to the
phone number. Yeah, fixed things on Wall Street while you were there. You had so much time to do so.
All right. We have a big show. Eric Bollard from Media Matters will co-host a rollicking right-wing world next hour, and then it's Hump Days with Hal.
Yes.
In hour number three. All right. In the meantime, by the way, here's the thing I love in New York. You know the papers, right? The Post and
the
Daily
Times?
News?
Oh.
Yeah. You know what's happening. I even on the subway, I knew what was happening.
Yeah.
Because the headline was Tiger Birdies. Get it? See, they have the funny little headlines, and I'm like, oh, there's other tiger women. And so you get the whole thing from the headline. I'm like, oh. So
they're clever that way.
Yes. Oh, dear. We played the little whoopsie phone message that came out. Oh, heavens. All right. I just finished my $5 bagel, by the way. Oh.
Was it yummy?
Are you kidding me? Okay, I finished day five of the of my Chinese food, I think, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Last night I was down to those, you know, the noodles with the peanut sauce or something. So
I never really
was...
get Chinese food, so I
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's expensive here, so, you know, Mama's making things. I got to eat cat food the rest of the week now.
Oh.
How is a bagel $5? I don't understand. Oh, it's, anyway. All right. I went to, I was at MSNBC last night on my buddy, my pal, Ed Schultz's show.
Yes.
After the, what do you call it? The president's big speech. But I ran into, the big news is I ran into Rachel Maddow, our buddy, our pal. Got her number. We're going to go out for cocktails, you know.
She knows from cocktails.
What's that?
She knows from cocktails.
Yes, she does.
She's a mixologist.
We were talking about where we live in New York, and she said she lives in a tenement, but I think she lies. I'm like, no, you do not, Rachel Maddow. And then she told me more stories about how her dad is obsessed with me, and I don't think that's true.
Oh, he totally is. Hi,
is
Steph,
it
it's Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca. Have you talked to Bob, Rachel's dad, Bob?
Bob loves you.
I love Bob.
And whenever he calls, he's like a regular caller, and then he's like, oh, but I'm Rachel's dad. And I'm like, oh.
I don't think Bob's lovely wife Elaine would like it. It's not obsession really so much as anyway, it was great to see Rachel. She looks great, and you know, we'll be I will tell you the hard drinking stories as soon as they come in.
Yeah, when's that going to happen?
I don't know. You know, we have a scheduling thing because I get off and then she has to, and I'm like, I can go out for drinks at 11. Why not? Why not? I'm just saying yes to everything in New York. I'm like, why not?
Oh, aren't you scheduled for two parties on one night now?
Yes, on Friday. I've got invited out more than in my entire life in L.A. You know, I left the house, twice.
Twice,
I think, actually. Oh, you know, Rebecca Baker, Taylor, pardon me.
Mm-hmm.
I did have to go out of the house yesterday. You know why? I had to go buy printer cartridges.
Oh, you make me so proud. You did it.
After you screamed at me, I found the... staples or whatever.
Are you going to do that from now on?
No. I thought you mailed them to me. Where? What the?
They're on the way.
Yeah, whatever.
She had ordered them from the company. The company can't just drop them in the mail.
Listen, here's how, as you know, I am so old and infirm, I cannot really take care of myself. I locked myself out of my apartment yesterday. I had to call the guy that owns the show that's trying to kill me for the insurance money. He had the guy, because I didn't have my cell phone. I had to borrow some guy in the street cell phone.
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. Well, I told you there's like four doors going into my apartment, and the guys rang the bell that were coming to fix something. I don't know. And so it closed behind me, and I'm like...
Oh, that's not
good. And my keys and my cell phone and my dogs were right. We're in there. And good for me. Good for me. And I thought of you, Rebecca. I was thinking Rebecca would be laughing and saying, what an idiot.
Yeah, it's good to know you're still a dumb skank out there.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yes!
Like that. All right. We're going to let her have the last word here. 28 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
She's perfect. She's loud, mouthy.
Hi, thank you. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 33 minutes after the hour, the Dow is down 11 points. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Tom in Seattle, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Tom.
Hi, I know there's a lot of serious discussion this morning, but nice big hair all the way out over your left shoulder. But it looked really good in you last night.
Thank
on
you.
MSNBC.
You look Thank hot. You. Yes, she built me some big anchor hair last night.
Yeah, but you know what? New York suits you. I think it's bringing out the true you.
Oh, why, friggin' yo. Thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate it. Julie in Seattle, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Stephanie. You know, I had big plans this morning. I was going to drop the brown acid, but when I saw you last night make the shocking statement that you were going to give the president the benefit of the doubt, I decided I would instead put that off a few hours and call and preemptively defend you from the 90% of your listeners who are going to call you a tool.
Yep.
Here's the deal. First of all, I think that Obama did not approach that speech as or this decision as a political issue, which to me right there is refreshing. But even though I'm a hippy-dippy liberal that actually goes around encouraging people to tell them not to let their children join the military, I think that would probably be the best way to end America's obsession with fighting everybody. But in this situation, Obama didn't get up there and wave, get explicit about the threat that he's addressing. And frankly, I don't blame him because everything he says is obviously taken the wrong way. But he did mention something that that greatly concerns me. I'm not a person who constantly, who studies the government in Pakistan, as I'm sure they do in the State Department, and as Obama and his people have done for lo these many months. But I think that's the primary concern that is motivating this decision. And here's the reason. He's not going to brandish the mushroom clouds, but I am. That government is so tenuous right now that I read the other day that that the president, again, whose name escapes me, but the gentleman who was married to Benazir Bhutto and started with a very sketchy base of power, is so embattled that he was compelled to resign from his position as being in the chain of command as to nuclear decisions. That's now in the hands of, his prime minister. He's considered to be
Well, no, you raise a good point. Remember, we made this point during the campaign that, here's a guy that was smart enough that he was already working on loose nukes with Richard Lugar. Like, he was had his eye on the people that really had weapons of mass destruction and what was a threat to America, unlike the Bush administration about Iraq.
Precisely. And, I love Jan Schakowsky and all my liberal peeps, like my sisters and brothers, but I think they're missing the forest for the trees here when they say they don't see the purpose of addressing Pakistan by maintaining trying to create some sort of order in Afghanistan. But the problem is, if you allow that situation to descend into God knows what kind of hellish anarchy by a sudden and precipitous and withdrawal at a time when things are clearly deteriorating, you create on the border of Pakistan, a country with 65 to 100 nuclear weapons, and a place for people who would prefer to overthrow that government and basically go over and organize their campaign and assist the people in Pakistan that want to destabilize.
Right. And in that case, you're absolutely right. The issue is more the nukes and the unstableness of Pakistan. Because when you say, oh, there's only 100, Afghanistan Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, it only takes one.
But I think that, frankly, I don't think it's so much a matter of the threat from Al-Qaeda, although Americans, God love them, most of them don't bother to pay attention to health care or anything else. That's my experience.
The real reason I turned into a hawk, though, Julie, it's because I moved to New York, and now I'm the target. I take the subway, and, yeah.
I haven't your hawk wings yet, but I do, one of the things that I don't think people perhaps are giving consideration to is the fact that every 5 years or so, India and Pakistan nearly go at it with their nuclear weapons. And if the wrong people, be they Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda-influenced, or just plain crazy, like most of these people that I think Obama's concerned with, were to take over, that situation could erupt. That's an environmental, I'm going to be Dick Cheney this morning. God love it. Imagine the environmental catastrophe and the
It's almost like
chaos.
You did take, it's like you did take the brown acid, because I sense that Chris is flanking us both on the left, which is
well,
really.
Well, I knew they'd come after you, Mama. So I just want to say that, I've been against every war I ever saw. The one thing that does offend me, and since he's not here, I'm going to say a thing or two about Jim and the other people who disagree with Obama's thinking on this, which is fine. It's one thing to disagree with analysis, but it's another thing to assume that his motives are unclean or ambitions to put a pipeline through there and that he's lying to us. I think that he was honest last night, although
plus, because he's not the one that got us into this, so I would beg to differ.
I think he loves war. He's not an idiot like
Julie. I always say this. This is where I can't sometimes even have a conversation with our right-wing friends, because I'm like, okay, I understand you don't think that's the right strategy on this or that or the economy, but do you really think the president's trying to destroy capitalism in our country, and he's had a socialist plot since he was in kindergarten. Really?
And I think that there's a corollary on the left, which is the assumption that that the reason he's making this decision is because he's just another warmongering American president who says whatever it takes to keep the war machine going. And I've heard a lot of comments like that. And I think that really Obama has done nothing to deserve that kind of distrust.
Yeah, absolutely. Great points. You are the smartest girl in class. Thanks for sending me all the show.
Now I could go drop my brown acid.
Yeah.
Back to what I usually do.
Exactly. Well, thanks for sending me all the
food.
Thanks for sending me all the show prep so that Chris
and
Rebecca can just
food.
Be slackers that insult me all day.
Hey.
Okay.
Thank you, Jules.
Well, bye.
There she goes. Okay.
That wasn't nice.
What? Rebecca just called me a skank 4 minutes ago.
Well, you deserved it.
Actually, a dumb skank.
Yes. And?
Okay, I didn't say it was incorrect.
Okay.
Just saying.
I don't know what you do on the streets of New York now.
I didn't necessarily say there's any respect I'm entitled to. I'm just saying. Max in L.A. on the war. Hello, Max. Welcome.
Hello. You know, I'm tired of hearing from people like that last caller who said that because he's not dumb like George Bush, somehow this is thoughtful. Does anybody really believe that if the violence amps up to a new peak in 2011, we're really leaving? We're not. We're not ever leaving. And if the Soviet
Well, I hope that's not true, Max. I mean, I understand your pessimism. I just hope it's not true.
But if the Soviet Union, which fought war with no rules whatsoever and anything goes...
Right, but the president also addressed that on how that... And it's not, you know, it is not a direct analogy, and neither is Vietnam. Thank you, Max. I mean, you can tell me. I sense that you're a little skeevy on this war. But the point I made last night on TV is I just said, you know, look at the last two nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office studies. They have proved the president right. On health care,
right.
The people's premiums will go down.
Right.
On the stimulus that has saved, you know, what, 1.6 million jobs and averted a recession and unemployment would be higher.
Right.
I'm just saying he's been right so far. You know, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on this.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yes.
Really? Oh, I thought you were flanking me on the left today. All right, fine.
I don't know where you got that idea, where you and Julie got that idea. In fact, I was just having an argument with a friend of mine on instant message before the show, and he was like, how can you be supporting this? I'm like, well, you know what? We need to get out of this carefully. We can't just completely pull out.
Did you notice, by the way, when I was talking to Congresswoman Schakowsky, I got that line right for the first time ever?
Yes, you did. Congratulations.
About the president saying we need to be as careful getting out of Iraq as we were careless getting in.
I think you're just plain dumb.
I'm smarter now that I'm in New York. Okay, Don in Rockford, my right-wing love muffin. Hello, Don.
Well, I'm not obsessed with you, but I definitely think you're awesome.
Thank you, Don.
I think that, you know, the president is definitely doing the right thing. I don't, you know, I didn't vote for him. I'm not going to vote for him again. But he does do some things right. And that's, you just got to say, look, I think that this particular administration with this particular president was in a no-win situation as soon as he took over, and you have to applaud him to try and do what he can do. He must know things we don't know because I did not support Bush on either one of these.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Don, is I'm sorry. Did I give George Bush the benefit of the doubt? No. Based on a history of, I felt, not being very bright and disastrous decisions, no, I didn't. What I'm saying is I am giving this president the benefit of the doubt. You know, I think he's doing the best he can. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm always going to think that for 4 years or 8 years. But thank you, Don. Don's a reasonable Republican.
Yes. What Obama is doing is cleaning up a giant pile of flaming dog crap that's been left on our porch by the previous administration.
Second. Yes, grab a hose or a mop or whatever the president says. You know what I'm talking about.
it can't be cleaned up with a broom.
Something bigger than that.
Yes.
Okay, 43 minutes.
Maybe one of those Swiffer things.
All right. Our thoughts and yours at 1-800-STEF-12, the phone number on the president's big speech last night. Everybody's a pundit after a presidential speech. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
God, what did you have for breakfast this morning, Carnation Instant Bitch?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
There are those who suggest that Afghanistan is another Vietnam. They argue that it cannot be stabilized, and we're better off cutting our losses and rapidly withdrawing. I believe this argument depends on a false reading of history. Unlike Vietnam, we are joined by a broad coalition of 43 nations that recognizes the legitimacy of our action. Unlike Vietnam, we are not facing a broad-based popular insurgency. And most importantly, unlike Vietnam, the American people were viciously attacked from Afghanistan and remain a target for those same extremists who are plotting along its border. To abandon this area now and to rely only on efforts against al-Qaeda from a distance would significantly hamper our ability to keep the pressure on al-Qaeda and create an unacceptable risk of additional attacks on our homeland and our allies.
Sue in Rockville, Maryland, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Sue. Hello, Sue. Sue going once, going twice. Hello.
Not Sue.
All right, whoever it is, go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Sue, go ahead.
Beth? Oh, I'm
yes.
So sorry. I don't know what the heck's wrong with my phone. I know, you have to be some kind of confident person to give a speech that makes every single person unhappy. I mean, everyone was unhappy last night. There was
it
no
didn't
one
make
really
me unhappy. I mean, I think the Sue, the reaction was all over the place. I agree with you, but I don't think it made everybody unhappy.
The right wing doesn't want an exit date. The left wing doesn't want him to do it at all. I am sort of like the previous caller in the sense that I'm hoping, beyond hope, that they know stuff that we don't know that justifies killing more of our precious soldiers and our people.
Well, I thought he had a point about, you know, we can't only fight them from a distance. Bette Midler was unhappy about that, I think. What?
It's what's crazy about it is that, again, I mean, you can't say it often enough. What Bush and Cheney did to this country, the travesty and the utter incompetence over and over and over again, has put us in such a vulnerable position that no matter what this president does. But, I mean, just listening to people last night, it was just like, you got to be some kind of person where everyone is angry at what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It just was.
Well, you know, I think Ed Schultz said it best last night. Like, who'd want to be president right now? Would you want to be president? I mean, it really, and that's the thing. That's why, I brought up the CBO reports. I mean, I'm not saying, Sue, everything is perfect. Far from it. But all I'm saying is, if you look at cold, hard numbers, people have to remember this is a nonpartisan analysis. It cuts both ways. So the CBO reports, when they say, yes, we have saved or created 1.6 million jobs, with the unemployment would be higher without the stimulus. We would, they're not just Obama fans. They're doing a budget analysis. When they say the president is right, his plan will lower premiums for people with health insurance,
Apparently, only 10% of the stimulus money has been used. So let's get a good jobs program in there. We can walk and chew gum. So let's get jobs here in this country. Let's use that money, and then let's get a war tax or something that we pay for this war, and let the right wing either put up or shut up.
Yep, absolutely. Tom in Indiana still has faith in the president. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Steph. I'm also glad that you do as well. How when we used to see President Cheney and Vice President Bush talking on both sides of their mouth, or that feeling you get when O'Reilly tells you he's looking out for you. There was none of that last night. There was none of that last night. I feel like this guy, he's doing the right thing. He's going to be up front with us. And you got to give him a shot. You got to give him a chance. We can't just pull right out of there like that.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, I'm not saying, that's the thing, Tom. None of us know right or wrong. Is this right or wrong? What I'm saying is I think you're right. He has looked at a really difficult problem that he was left and decided this is the best way to try. And I'm just saying this is his first shot at it. Let's give him a shot.
Right. And if he honestly thinks that we can establish, what he put forth last night in 18 months, I'm behind him.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Tom. Bruce in New York is among the war weary. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, beautiful. How are you?
Hello, wife. Thank you.
Oh, I was talking to the mooks. Just kidding.
Oh,
screw you. You're beautiful. Listen, two quick thoughts, and I'll bring them right to you. Firstly, if this war had started January of 2008, and we were, you know, a year and a half into it, and this is what he came up with. I think we wouldn't have a problem giving him his 18 months. It's because it basically hasn't changed in 7 years because Bush neglected it for 7 years.
Right, that's what I'm saying is, let's, you know, he sees what has happened over 8 years. Let's give him a shot at how to solve it. The president yesterday on Afghanistan.
Afghanistan is not lost, but for several years it has moved backwards. There's no imminent threat of the government being overthrown, but the Taliban has gained momentum. Al-Qaeda has not reemerged in Afghanistan in the same numbers as before 9/11, but they retain their safe havens along the border. And our forces lack the full support they need to effectively train and partner with Afghan security forces and better secure the population. Our new commander in Afghanistan, General McChrystal, has reported that the security situation is more serious than he anticipated. In short, the status quo is not sustainable.
By the way, Chris, did you see he took it to the Dick Cheney?
Ah, did he?
He was saying there has, well, I mean, he didn't say it directly, but there's not been any dithering. You know, it's just all of the stuff Cheney's been saying. First of all, how does that guy have any credibility on anything? Did you hear he actually had the brass ones to say, someone asked him, do you feel at all responsible, Afghanistan? He said, no.
What?
No.
They're the ones
said,
who
no.
invaded.
Yeah.
With
He's
a,
like,
with
no,
a...
do you feel responsible for what's happening? No. It's like, what? You were in charge. This was your strategy. You know, and so he's, but anyway, he was talking about that there has never been any, you know, lapse in terms of what the troops needed and what's happened in Afghanistan. Mm. Mike and Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Morning.
Hello, Mike.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm depression is setting in, and it's because of the reality of this situation. Of course, this isn't Obama's fault. They can label it his war, but what I find most depressing and discouraging about it is the support that he's getting, the president's getting for this move, is supported by the same people who are against health care and anything for Americans. It's gotten to that point where, yeah, I understand Obama's plight, and I understand ours as well, but I think we all kind of figured this out in 2000, didn't we?
Yep. George in Cleveland, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show on the president's speech as well. Hey, George.
George is no longer there.
Oh, right then. Glenn in Canada. What's that all about? Hi, Glenn.
Hi, everyone. This is classic Orwellian, what you folks are falling into. It's a faceless enemy. The war on terror is a fraud. It's all based on false flag events, and you have to look at the big picture. And unfortunately, I think your CIA is in control.
What's the big picture?
Well, the big picture, Steph, these are false flag events. 9/11 was. And it's clearly this is...
What's a false flag? What do you mean by that?
Well, it was staged from within. It was brought about...
And your proof of that is?
How about thermite in the dust of the World Trade Center? How about the photographs of the towers exploding?
Oh, right, Glenn.
Building
Jim will be along in a couple of minutes. I don't feel you and I are qualified to get into that whole discussion, but I personally don't think 9/11 was an inside job.
No.
I think it was yet more disastrous incompetence
exactly.
on behalf of the Bush administration. Jim Ward differs with us, and that's fine, as does our previous call.
And Glenn in Ontario has no proof that the CIA is in charge of America.
The president on the 30,000 troops.
The 30,000 additional troops that I'm announcing tonight will deploy in the first part of 2010. The fastest possible pace, so that they can target the insurgency and secure key population centers. They'll increase our ability to train competent Afghan security forces and to partner with them so that more Afghans can get into the fight.
All right. How is the right wing spinning the big speech last night? Eric Bollard from Media Matters for America joins me in the co-pilot seat for Right Wing World next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show, 6 minutes after the hour. The Dow is up 17 points. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, check it out. Is Mama on the MSNBC up from last night, Christopher?
Yep, absolutely. Shano posted it last night, and it's there towards the bottom of StephanieMiller.com.
Cool. Yeah, it was on in the middle of the night. Check me out. All right. StephanieMiller.com. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lavoie, voice deity Jim Ward, associate producer Rebecca Taylor, or me.
Out here it was on at 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
if you were out here, you would have been fine. Huh?
Exactly. See, I wasn't on in the prison dock block on the West Coast. So there.
Someone tweeted me and said that you were the hottest member on the panel last night at midnight.
It was only me and that Republican guy. Ernie Istook. Thanks.
Who?
That's what every gal wants to hear.
At least you're hotter than Joe Sestak.
Yeah, you remember when we filled in for Imus on MSNBC? That was the one I loved the best. You're prettier than Imus. Oh, thanks.
Hey, ooh, that's saying something.
Oh, that's what every little girl thinks of. Okay, Laura wants to know, with you in New York and Jim in L.A., who's going to grab your ass in the morning when you
know.
Get to work?
I know, damn it.
I know. Jim has only been able to grab it on the Skype, and it's highly
it's not
unsatisfying
the same.
For
not
me.
Not the same.
I sure
am. I'm going to start grabbing Rebecca's ass. But
I keep
Mr. Taylor
may
have something to say about that.
I keep leaving him messages, but his wife, Janiqua, is getting suspicious now. He's asked me to stop leaving him messages. All right. We'll play the Tiger Woods audio again.
Oh, we've got that.
Mm. Oh, you want to hear it again? Yeah, why not?
Hey, it's Tiger.
Hello.
I need to give me a huge favor. Can you please take your name off your phone? My wife went through my phone and may be calling you.
Oh, dear.
If you can, please take your name off that. And, what do you call it? Just have it as a number on the voicemail. Just have it as your
number.
Okay, I'll do this for me. Huge. Quickly. All right, bye.
Did it occur to him that he's being recorded? Hi, this is Tiger. Tiger Woods, the golfer.
Hi, Tiger. You may have seen me on the TV.
You know, last time when we were having sex, my wife found out about... What? I'm being recorded?
Yeah. What's the deal? Yeah, but it's almost as bad as Elliot Spitzer. Should I just sign the giant check, Governor of New York? No one will find that, will they? Okay. Jim, can I do a brief addition before we dive into Right Wing World? Men, what's up? You've seen Tiger Woods' wife, right?
Yeah, she's hot.
Gorgeous. It's like Hugh Grant. He's with Elizabeth Hurley, and he's trying to find some skank hoe on the corner of Hollywood Boulevard.
The very definition of skank hoe. She was
exactly.
She was not. Oof. I think it was nighttime.
On behalf of all men everywhere, please explain.
I think it's because he can. That because he's you know, that the women throw themselves at him, and he figures on some level it's just one of the perks of being a uber celebrity. You know, but and it's hard to imagine him getting bored with Miss Swedish Bikini Team.
Well,
there.
She's alone and lonely, Jim, so maybe he could be of some assistance.
Really?
Maybe there could be a squeezy house call.
Yeah.
All right.
No. Yeah. Bring my 9-iron.
Yeah.
I wish.
All right, let's dive into the right-wing world with our good friend Eric Bollert from Media Matters for America. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
First of all, what'd you think of the speech last night?
You know, I thought it was interesting. I thought they pretty much told everyone what was going to be, so it was mostly just sort of the theater criticism. But what was up with Chris Matthews last night calling West Point the enemy camp? Did you see that?
I saw that.
Oh, I missed that.
That wasn't smart.
No.
Why was he saying that? Oh,
well,
he was trying to imply the military.
You know, they gave Obama sort of, of a cool reaction. It seemed like he was traveling to the enemy camp. That's more where Paul Wolfowitz likes to hang out. And so he managed to get both the left and the right upset at him last night.
Yeah.
I think it's the first time Media Matters and Newsbusters ever...
ever agreed on something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it seemed to me like they gave him, you know, a certainly respectful, you know, and then they were mobbing him afterwards.
Yeah. It was Matthews with this just demented sense that the military hates Democrats. Democrats can't talk about national security. They're all a bunch of wimps. And if a Democrat shows up at West Point, he's like an enemy territory. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, not good.
Did you get any of that right-wing talking point on the front of you, Chris, when you burped it up? Or? Okay, Alex Castellanos on the Situation Room.
He needs to move to the middle. If Barack Obama takes a beating in the 2010 elections, this is what his future is going to look like. He's going to have to govern losing some Democrats on the left to gain the middle. He's out of position now. He's lost independents and suburban voters in the middle. Frankly, a little bit of uprising on the left will help him move toward the middle. This is the right thing to do for the country, and it's the right thing to do politically.
Help him move to the middle? How much further can he go?
Yeah, I mean, Eric, isn't it amazing? It's just they just don't think the president could do anything because he just thinks it's the right thing to do. Like, everything's got to be a scheme politically.
Well, that's very
and, oh, he's trying to piss the left off, and he's trying to do this.
Right. And it's just, and if you look at the polls, the American public is not particularly happy right now with the Afghanistan policy. But it's funny, if you go back to the Clinton years, everything he did, the press criticized him because he was poll watching. You know, he never did anything because he had a conviction. He never did anything because he thought it was the right thing. You know, Democrats in the 90s, all they did is poll watch and triangulate. And here's Barack Obama stating a policy that apparently he thinks is right and is not popular. And the press, you know, hammers him because he's not doing the popular thing, because he's not following the polls. So there's sort of this very strange double standard that the press
has. That's actually the greatest point, Eric. You're absolutely right. If he was doing this just politically, he would look at the polls and go, I'm getting out.
Yeah, that's right. And then there's many things. You know, the bailout of GM and the Big Three, not popular. So there was lots of things he did early on that were not popular, but he thought that had to be done for the good of the country. And again, during the Clinton years, you know, all Democrats did was follow the polls, and they never did anything. They never made the tough decisions. And so when Obama makes the tough decisions, they just sort of jump on him for being out of step with the polls. So can't win.
Absolutely.
Situation.
Charles Krauthammer on the Brit Mayer show.
The troubling element here, and probably the most important element, is how much the commander-in-chief is committed to success in this war. With Bush, there was no question. I went back, I had a look at the speech he gave in announcing the surge. There were no timelines, no essential conditions
other than
the Iraqis supporting us in the surge and not restricting our movements. No talk of withdrawal on timetables. With Obama, what you're getting is a call to war with an uncertain trumpet.
Oh, dear. Oh, it's more like a kazoo. It's like a war kazoo, Eric.
He's slighting his manhood.
Well, that's two things. This is sort of...
It's a war slide whistle. It's not the proper warlike instrument.
This is sort of the theater criticism. You know, everyone knew what Obama was going to say. So, particularly on the right wing, he didn't say it well enough or forcefully enough, or he didn't use the right words and things like that. And honestly, it is odd to hear people point to Bush as somehow the gold standard for talking about, you know, how you deal with Iraq and Afghanistan. And last night, particularly, virtually no discussion anywhere on the cable shows in that Obama's basically cleaning up Bush's mess. Mm-hmm. And how did Osama bin Laden get away for so long?
I was on in the middle of the night. I'm kind of on the C team.
All that is just sort of down the memory hole.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing that I keep saying, Eric, that stuns me. Krauthammer, all of them, I don't understand, like, winning to them, the only way is to just stay forever. Like,
forever,
not having an exit strategy is the only, like, manly thing to do, I guess. I don't understand, you know, that seems to them... Endless war seems to be the only answer.
I think that's what appeals to them. They want to be in the Persian Gulf forever, basically, I think. And mostly it's just a political thing and trying to hold Obama to this sort of very strange standard in terms of what you're going to do militarily and when you bring the troops home. And if you ever bring the troops home, it's a sign of failure.
Yep. Charles Krauthammer, I love this whole talking point that, you know, we should have a big blank golf check for Afghanistan, but health care, we can't. That's a big entitlement.
This is a huge entitlement. We know the history of health care entitlements. They always outrun the projections by a factor of 10 or 20 or 30. And this is going to be absolutely destructive at a time when the boomers are aging, health care costs are exploding, and already in the absence of all this is ruining our budget.
Oh, God.
Mm. Well, if you want to talk about projections that are usually a little bit more than they tend to be, Pentagon projections, war projections. I mean, what did Wolfowitz say in 2002 the war was going to cost? $200 million? I mean, some.
Yeah, and who said it was going to pay for itself? Or the oil would pay for it, yeah. Yeah.
It was, you know, we were going to come out ahead. We were probably going to end up with a couple million dollars in the bank. So, I mean, you know, now the fact that conservatives are nervous, yeah, that health
it's spending, a moneymaker, Iraq. Anyone can see that.
The idea that, you know, health care is suddenly, you can't do it because the projections might not add up after these are the same people that were cheerleading war for 7 years and projections be damned. There's a sly contradiction there.
It's Steve Hayes. It's amazing how on Fox they're able to, even when they agree with what he's doing, he didn't say it right.
It sends bad mixed messages, and I think it was one of the worst speeches I could imagine in support of the right policy decision.
Wow.
God.
Got it completely backwards.
Yeah.
I think if there's anything we can all agree on, Eric, it is that George Bush was a great speaker and Barack Obama is not. I mean, I think that's what?
Well, and for the White House, remember when they first came to town, they had dinner with all these conservative pundits and thought maybe they would ever say anything nice about them. I mean, again, this is what happens when the president is essentially in agreement with the Weekly Standard crowd. His reward is being told is being condemned for the worst speech ever. So, I mean, you can't win with this crowd. So hopefully that has nothing to do with any White House calculations, because they're never, ever, ever, even if they're ever in lockstep agreement on the policy, they're never going to give him the benefit of the doubt or compliment him or help him in any way.
Mm-hmm. I know. I love O'Reilly sort of echoes that. He's just, he's doing the right thing, but he's not war-y enough for me.
The problem with President Obama and war in general is that his liberal sensibility is not comfortable with combat. Mm. Compare Mr. Obama to Dick Cheney, perhaps the most hawkish politician
Mr.
in the
Five
country.
Deferments?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't you love that?
Yeah, he's comfortable with war.
Yeah, he's comfortable with getting his ass out of it when it's him personally.
And Bush, not particularly comfortable with war himself in terms of showing up for duty.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at those Bush speeches, I mean, there wasn't a pep band behind him. I mean, he wasn't, you know, there weren't rockets going off on the White House lawn. I mean, what did Bush's speech, how are his speeches any different? I mean, they're all rhetoric. They're all the same. But apparently O'Reilly can sense in Obama's soul that this is all malarkey and he doesn't mean
any of it. Call me crazy. I'm I kind of like a president that's a little uncomfortable with war, frankly. You say that like it's a bad thing.
Right, exactly. And again, if you look at the public polls, it's hard to decipher because people say they're unhappy. You don't know if they're unhappy with Obama in Afghanistan because they want to be or they don't want to be there. But this notion that, you know, the American public wishes Obama were a war cheerleader, I don't see any support for that in the polling.
Yeah, that was the last president, the war president. Eric Bollert, senior fellow at Media Matters for America. Thank you, sir.
Talk to you soon.
See you next time. There he goes, Eric Bollert.
I thought it was a brilliant speech. It just made me proud to have a commander-in-chief who is intelligent and articulate and understands.
Thank you. Now, wait,
the
hold
consequences.
Hold on.
However.
Hold on. No, don't. Stop. This is how we do a tease. Okay.
Yes. However.
I'm on in the middle of the night on the television doing a post-presidential speech analysis. Jim Ward has an Emmy, and he'll tell you what he thinks. Next, 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, here we are trying to get some serious analysis on Afghanistan from Emmy Award-winning Jim Ward. And now you have breaking gossip news, Chris.
Apparently Tiger Woods said today that he, quote, regrets transgressions that have, quote, let his family down.
Oh, wonder what he could mean by that. Oh, well, I suppose I could tell you the fun facts thus far. At least two more buxom beauties claim to have had torrid affairs with Tiger Woods. Hang on, let me turn this down just a little bit. Including one with whom he bombarded with more than 300 text messages.
Oh, boy.
And
good
warned
plan.
Last week that his wife was getting suspicious for some reason. Let's see, one text said, I will wear you out. When was the last time you got laid? That was an alleged text to Mistress Jamie Grubbs. Grubbs, a sexy 24-year-old L.A. cocktail waitress, told the magazine she had her first of 20 wild sex romps with Woods in mid-April 2007. One source told us that Tiger and his wife could be heard shouting, and they didn't care who heard on the day of the fight. Everyone in the neighborhood was talking about how Ellen beat his ass.
Wow.
The source said. Meanwhile, a second mistress, also named yesterday, was Kalika Moquin, a Vegas club manager. The Inquirer reports a third alleged Woods mistress, Rachel Yucatel. She's denied the affair, but sources told Us Magazine she and Woods have been hot and heavy for about 6 months.
Oh, dear. He likes girls with funny names, apparently. That's part of his
apparently
part of his thing, I guess.
That's his bag.
His personal bag.
Papa's got a brand new bag.
Oh, by the way, in other alleged affair, well, that's, this one isn't alleged. Another affair news. I love this one. This is Senator Ensign. Where's my Senator John Ensign? He is resisting calls for his resignations. He says his affair with a friend's wife has strengthened his marriage.
What?
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
That seems.
So there's
that
a little
happens.
Marriage tip for all y'all out there. We chicks dig it. That's
great.
That's, let me just
God,
polish
I wish
this
I'd known
turd,
that.
Honey. Exactly. Explain that to your lovely wife, Janiqua, won't you? Honey, it will strengthen our marriage.
Strengthen the marriage if I fool around with cocktail waitresses with funny names.
And,
yes.
No, really.
And club promoters.
And, yes, cocktail waitresses. Okay. All right. Well, isn't that something? Okay. We still don't. I think Jim Ward gave the best apropos explanation ever. I'm like, when I said, have you seen his wife? She's gorgeous. Why? And you said, because he can.
That's right. He can.
It's like, you know, why does a dog lick his? Because he can. That's why. It's the same explanation.
But to some extent, it's a power thing. It's just subconscious. It's just being able to collect beautiful women. It's just.
It's
a gajillion bucks. It's
some
it's
people
just
collect stamps, baseball cards.
Right.
Some people cocktail waitress. Sure.
Now, was Meredith Baxter coasters. Cheating on David Burney?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jim, did you hear the other breaking news this morning? Meredith Baxter Burney will announce that she's a lesbian on the
Damn
Today
it.
Show.
And I thought
Bridget
I had a shot.
Yeah. Oh. By the way, you got here late. I already did the joke. Bridget loves Bridget. Okay. Not Burney, because.
So would that make Michael Gross her beard? See, because
I don't know. She's been married several times.
See, because he had a beard
right.
in Family Ties. You see.
And he was playing the
music.
Liberal,
this,
and he's really
this,
conservative. And
this,
what? Anyway, what?
This is in the Squeezy McFeel Pants file. It, she apparently was on a lesbian cruise along with Kelly McGillis.
Wow.
Not together.
Oh, right. Okay.
I just knew that would give Jim a visual. Okay. All right. Let's get back to the...
I thought she was into Tom Cruise. Oh, that was a movie. Okay. No,
28 minutes.
No, she was into Harrison Ford in Witness.
Mm-hmm. They're actors. Mm. 28 minutes after the hour. Now back with Emmy Award-winning Jim Ward's Afghanistan analysis and the speech last night as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good day to you, and welcome to
Stephanie Miller,
a show where we talk very softly and right into the mic. Do you hear that? I'm whispering right in your ear.
Good morning.
That's
we're
what
talking
we should
all,
have done.
We're talking all creepy in your ear.
How do you like my sweaty balls?
33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll-free from anywhere. This will be the only show this morning you'll hear a sweaty ball joke and then right into cogent war analysis by Emmy Award-winning Jim Ward. So you like the speech?
Oh, well, yeah, I thought it was very
I can't even talk.
It's hard not to play compare and contrast with George Bush.
I know.
Right?
He's just so brilliant and so moving in a sort of detached sort of way. I mean, it just makes you proud.
In a Vulcan kind of way.
Exactly. But it just made me proud that we finally have a president with an IQ bigger than a shoe size. And, just the contrast between the previous...
Jim, I've been saying, it's not like I'm not getting hate mail from the left. I mean, that's what I'm saying is that I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because he's not George Bush.
Right.
And I think, yes, that I think he is thinking, it may be wrong. I don't know. Above my pay grade, but I think trying to do the best he can with a really bad situation.
And we're only getting a small sliver of information of what's really going on there. I mean, so much this right. black ops and outside of the
right.
The
well,
budget.
When people, right, and when people call and go, I'm giving George Bush the benefit of the doubt, you're like, why? he's lied to us about weapons of mass destruction.
He was apparently a liar and transparently stupid.
Yes, Bush was has screwed up everything. Why would you still give him the benefit of the doubt, you know?
And he would actually spurt out the talking points that were written for him.
Yeah.
He said, no, you're not supposed to say it that verbatim. That's for off mic.
By the way, people did give him the benefit of the doubt, particularly after 9/11, even though a lot of us in the back of our minds were going, this just happened on his watch.
Right.
How come no one's saying anything about it? Okay.
But having said that, I just... So maybe the Pakistan border is the center now for al-Qaeda plotting, but they're in Sudan. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's nothing magical about Pakistan that that makes that. We have to just.
Except that I don't know if you heard Julie in Seattle earlier made the really interesting point. This is what we were saying from early on. Obama was smart enough early on to be working with Richard Lugar on securing loose nukes. That's
right.
Where weapons of mass destruction
exactly.
really are.
Which
not
was what Valerie
Iraq.
Plame was working on before she was.
Yeah.
The nukes in Pakistan are probably the most important thing. Democracy and puppies and elves and footy pajamas and toadstools in Afghanistan would be nice.
Puppies? Actually, they'd be Did someone sitting, say puppies?
Actually, they'd be sitting on opium plants. But
puppies or poppies?
Yeah,
poppy.
Poppy for anything that involves puppies. All right, the president yesterday.
This is not just America's war. Since 9/11, al-Qaeda's safe havens have been the source of attacks against London and Amman and Bali. The people and governments of both Afghanistan and Pakistan are in danger. And the stakes are even higher within a nuclear-armed Pakistan because we know that al-Qaeda and other extremists seek nuclear weapons, and we have every reason to believe that they would use them. These facts compel us to act along with our friends and allies.
Here's the other thing, Jim. He pronounces countries right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is that.
And he knows how to pronounce nuclear as well.
Exactly. All right. Andy in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Steph. I just wanted to give my endorsement to what the president said also, which I know he's waiting for. But I think that he's on the right track.
Here's what I think we should do if Andy in Chicago is all right with it. That's what he said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because... He's not couching it in the form of it making it about retribution. It's not about saber rattling. It's about national security. And I live sort of with a foot in different camps because I was in the service a long time ago. I have brothers who were career officers in the service. A lot of people come at it with different approaches about what they feel about the president who's in the office right now. And that's not the point. The point is he's trying to keep us safe. He's trying to articulate what the mission is correctly. He wants us to
right, and I think when we say he's not George Bush, it's because you're right. It's not the same kind of fear mongering and saber rattling and that kind of bravado. You know, I mean, I think you're right. It seemed whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. It seemed well reasoned.
And he does have an exit strategy.
And I mean, the point is not to try and do. It's not nation building for its own sake. It's not a matter of we're there because we broke it. Now we have to fix it. We're there because it was broken. It threatened our security, and now we have to make ourselves safe.
Thank you, Andy. Yeah, thank you, Andy. And, you know, Jim, it does occur to me. Another thing occurred to me is he has apparently read a book now and again. He does seem to have some grasp of Vietnam and the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. He knows about history.
Yes, and what analogy is apt or not. Go ahead, Jim.
I'm going to go back to the point that there's –
a lot that we don't know that is that we may never find out what's really going on. What's going on with the oil and gas pipelines? What's happening with the Russians and the Chinese and other actors in the region? There was that whole scandal that Sybil Edmonds dug up about Turkish spies, where Denny Hastert actually had to register as an agent of Turkey because of weird stuff going on with that
And we know he doesn't like turkey. He only eats pork.
Oh, yeah. Pork. Turkey's too dry. Not in the pan in that.
Martin in Seattle says it's a question of moral authority. Hey, Martin.
Hey, Stephanie. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, you're smoking, too. The first time I've ever seen you on TV, and you're quite beautiful.
Everything you can bet.
I thought the speech was killer. The thing that blew me away is I turned on Fox, regrettably, just to see what they say. And they complained like it was that he didn't rally America and didn't rally to the cadets. And, you know, I took it as a serious speech. And he brought up, like, our moral authority. And at one point he said America bears a special burden, you know, of helping other countries out when I guess you could call it, some people call it nation building. I don't look at it like that. For a long time I did, but when I heard him speak last night, I realized not only our security for America, but other countries, you know, we're helping other countries possibly not get attacked, having that stuff spread out throughout the Middle East and grow bigger and bigger and bigger.
Thank you, Andy. Well, yeah, thank you.
It is nice to have a president who's appreciated around the world, who's not vilified.
Well, right, because like you said, we can't solve the war on terror just militarily. They are everywhere, so right. it's not just there.
And we need our allies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need intelligence.
Including France. So, yeah.
Yeah, which is by definition French and gay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, George in Tempe, Arizona, on Karl Rove's comments on the speech. Hey, hello, George.
Hey, you know, I got a few points here, and this is so tough. First of all, doesn't anybody have a concern that Karl Rove and the whole Bush regime thinks that was a really great idea? And so I'm looking at this whole thing. And listen to what Jim's saying about all these things that we don't know. You know, when Bush was in charge and we heard that there are all these things we didn't know, we wanted to know them. Now we're giving
But we knew Obama, they were lying.
We're giving, well, maybe so, but we're giving Obama the same, we're giving Obama a pass because we don't know, and I don't think that's fair. You know, and here's something else. Mm-hmm. We're going to Afghanistan. Afghanistan didn't attack us. A 6'5" Saudi who is carrying a kidney machine around the caves in Afghanistan, he is the one who attacked us. So,
allegedly.
Really, we should be, you know, we shouldn't be attacking Afghanistan because of that. And if we have a problem with Pakistan, let's deal with Pakistan, not with Afghanistan. I don't think there's any reason we should be there. This is just going to be a huge quagmire. It's just, it was a great speech. Yes, it was a great speech. He's a great speaker, and he's articulate. He's intelligent. But you know what? He's wrong. And it's not where we should be. It's not what we should be
that's
doing.
Where, well, that's your right, George, to think so. Thanks for calling. I mean, you know, that's the thing, Jim. I'm not saying I don't know how this is going to turn out and when and where, but, I do think that winning does involve an exit strategy.
Right.
It
yes,
does involve
absolutely.
Getting out at some point.
The most important thing is making sure the Pakistani nukes are secure. And having talks with India and the other nuclear powers in the region to make sure that that those remain in hopefully responsible hands.
You may have heard it, but Jim dropped a subliminal 9/11 conspiracy sausage, and now Susan is all hot and bothered. Susan in Santa Fe, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, Steph. I'm so excited to be on the air. I'm sorry to kind of go backwards here, but I guess about, I don't know, 30 minutes or so, a guy called in and brought up the whole 9/11 conspiracy thing, and I've wanted to call in for a while, and I just wondered if Jim has shared Loose Change with you guys, the video that was all hot.
Oh, I've got
hot
all versions of Loose Change.
I think it was like the third edition, I think, was the best.
The thing is, if I give anything to Stephanie, she'll throw it away.
conspiracy,
blah, blah, blah.
Just enough time to at least watch. There's some footage where as the building is coming down on the lower floors before, the building actually crashes, you can see explosions happening.
And then also that little squirrel appears in the screen.
No, stop it.
Oh, I'm kidding.
What are you talking about?
Oh, but it's really interesting. You can't. I don't think that we can assume that that the government absolutely wasn't behind it. I don't know. It's just it puts out a really interesting theory.
Well, I can, but maybe you and Jim can.
Every American just should see. I mean, I'm not saying that the government did it, but it's very interesting, and everyone should watch Loose Change.
All right. But, all right. Thank you, Sue.
But the more you know, the more doubt you have about the official story, if you're at all open-minded. But
Jim, I just can't believe, with as smart as you are, you don't know that thing where you can put that squirrel in the picture in any email you send someone. You can put a squirrel in anything. That little squirrel.
Yeah, Stephanie, people did that a year ago.
All right,
I've never heard of that.
44 minutes.
But we keep hearing that Osama bin Laden is behind it, but I think the only evidence we have of that is that big fat guy pretending to be Osama saying that he was behind the 9/11 attacks. But it's clearly not him.
It's like Christmas season. It's like department store Santa.
Yes, exactly.
Wait a minute.
He was. He could have been a department store Santa, the other guy.
Wait a minute. 44 minutes after the hour, back with the a lot of the right-wing reaction to the president's speech last night as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Highbrow, lowbrow, unibrow. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Told by the time I took office, the cost of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan approached $1 trillion. And going forward, I am committed to addressing these costs openly and honestly. Our new approach in Afghanistan is likely to cost us roughly $30 billion for the military this year. And I'll work closely with Congress to address these costs as we work to bring down our deficit.
What? Is that even American, putting war in the budget? Huh?
Shh, don't tell anybody. Hide it. Sweep it under the carpet.
49 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Dave in Buffalo on the war strategy. Hello, Dave.
Dave is no longer there, but we have Tim in Madison.
Yes, Tim. Hi, Tim. Hello, Tim. Or not.
Tim's not there.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Senator... well, we also have Bill in Chicago.
Oh, that's fine, too, then. Hello, Bill.
Good morning. I found it interesting that Richard Engel last night in Afghanistan said that actually what the new philosophy is going to be is try to stabilize what is already, so instead of chasing the Taliban all over the hills and being spread out, is they're going to take these guys and they're going to help stabilize areas that already are stable, and therefore once the people are enabled to get into a pattern of life again, that way they'll be able to repel the influence of the Taliban when they try to come in and take. So I think that, and he seemed to think that that was a workable philosophy as well. I like the appeal of that.
Yep. Yeah, well, I hear you.
He's on the ground there. I mean, he probably knows more about what's going on than anybody.
Yeah. We should get him your strategy about the airlifting of anything with a vagina, including the goats out of Afghanistan.
Larry is a trucker in Pennsylvania, and he is proud of Obama.
Oh, hello, Larry.
Hi. I've been on a couple times. Love the show, and a strong conservative. Old grandfather, truck driver character, easy to stereotype.
it's like you're writing a sitcom for yourself. All right.
Well, I'm one of the knuckle draggers, stumbling across the parking lot. It's the first hard decision Obama's made, first major commitment that I'm proud of and in agreement with. But there's tragedy built into it. I think Bush's tragedy was that in Iraq he fought foolishly, right? He forgot what Colin Powell taught very clearly in terms of how to go to war. So Iraq was fought very, very stupidly for many years, for too many years, before he finally got a grip and did it right. And I think Obama's prepared himself for the same fate.
Wait a minute. Let's go back. Iraq shouldn't have been fought at all. It's like there's no way to fight Iraq right. We shouldn't have been there in the first place. There were no weapons of mass destruction. They posed no threat to us.
I'm not arguing that. You can argue it.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Well, I just had a little argument with myself, and I won.
A high percentage of us would say that the war did happen. How's that?
Yeah. Oh, okay. You do have it there.
One of those stuff facts. And Powell, I think, understood very wisely in kicking Saddam and his folks out of Kuwait. You take a huge and overwhelming force. You do it quickly. You do it with the support of the American people. And an exit strategy doesn't mean a date that you're going to leave. It means conditions that are suitable for leaving with a victory. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we don't have majority support in the country. When you've got Barbara Lee and Maxine Waters the same night you make your speech openly disagreeing with the basic argument you're making, you're in trouble. It's a tragic situation, and it's a little bit, I think he's saying, okay, I really want to have a baby. I've just gotten pregnant, but I only have 3 months. We've got to get this done in 3 months. Can't do it that way.
Interesting analogy. All right. If I think he's saying, Jim, if the president were that pregnant man and he had to have it. All right. Anyway, he was doing fine till then. Here's the thing. Yeah, Donald Rumsfeld clearly does not have Colin Powell skills. What the hell was he thinking at Tora Bora?
Well,
seriously.
I don't think that's incompetence. I think the Bush administration wanted Osama alive to keep him as a boogeyman, to keep people frightened. If we had actually gone in there and gotten Osama bin Laden, dead or alive, put him on trial, whatever. There's no way they could have justified going into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It was only the fear generated by having him out there because of 9/11 that made it at all plausible. It wasn't plausible to my mind at all, but they couldn't have convinced anyone that we needed to go into Iraq if we had got Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm. Senator John McCain, as you remember, during the campaign, his strategy basically die, kill, and don't ever stop. Senator John McCain yesterday.
The president made the right decision to embrace a counterinsurgency strategy that's properly resourced. I believe the 30,000 troops plus additional troops from our NATO allies will be really sufficient to get the job done. And I believe that Republicans and Democrats should support this strategy. What I don't support and do not agree with is an arbitrary date for withdrawal. You set an arbitrary date, it emboldens our enemies and dispirits our allies. And so I believe that we need to clear that up, because you're either going to set an arbitrary date or it's going to be based on conditions on the ground.
Well, I see his point. I mean, but if you set certain conditions and we don't meet them, then what? Do we go on forever and ever and ever? I mean, we could still be in Vietnam if...
Yes. Well, you remember his campaign strategy. It was die, kill.
We have to strike now, sir. Annihilate. Kill. Kill. Kill.
Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
Bom, 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 bom.
Bom, ran.
He just did that as George Bush. Oh,
okay. Well, either way.
Yeah.
Impressions, not my bag, unless it's Linda Blair. All right, Representative Nita Lowey, Democrat of New York, yesterday.
Now that he's made a decision, I need to get clarity of the mission. I need to get a clear understanding of what our allies are doing and what they're contributing. I need to get a clear understanding of what Karzai is going to do and the government's going to do to address corruption. And we have to have all these guidelines in place before.
You know, and I think those are good points. I mean, and once again, maybe I am giving the president too much benefit of the doubt. But, you know, Jim, that's the other thing. You don't get the cooperation of the world overnight. George Bush spent 8 years destroying America's relationships around the world. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I think the president has made leaps and bounds since he's been in. I think his speech in Cairo, I think a lot of things he's doing. But, again, it's not going to happen overnight.
And I don't think we can fix Afghanistan. I just don't.
Does it need to be broken up?
Well, I mean, it's already broken up into various ethnic and
does it officially need to be broken up?
I think the problem is Al Qaeda and the nukes in Pakistan. I mean, that's it. We can't.
Yeah.
There's no way we're
going
to get rid
of the Taliban.
Yeah,
you're right. We can't do anything about all the other religious
or
and ethnic
the poppy opium trade or corruption.
Right.
It's,
All right, 57 no minutes after the hour. Ooh, there's extra adultery in the celebrity stack. Back with that and Hump Days with Hal as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. The Dow down 1.5 points. 1.44, 1.36, 0.98. Never mind.
We got it.
StephanieMiller.com is the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lavoie, voice deity Jim Ward, surly associate producer Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller, like Debbie did from Millfield, Ohio. Lots of people love the pictures of Max and Fred on the website. Mom.
Fred?
I found, attention New York, I found Fred's poo this morning in Central Park.
Dude.
So I did pick it up. Yesterday, we had a little mishap. I did a 10-minute search through the leaves. I couldn't find it. Apologize about that. Anyway, there's pictures up, and I'm still trying to figure out how to send you the rest of them, Christopher, of their flight on Pet Airways.
What? I thought John Fugelsang was supposed to help you with that.
I forgot. Oh. Debbie writes, wow, Steph, those are some big dogs. What does Pet Airways fly? B-52s? Yes, they're rather large. I'll try to get the rest of the pictures up. Mama on MSNBC is up on the YouTube section at StephanieMiller.com.
Yeah, it's up on the front page of StephanieMiller.com. Just scroll down
a little bit. About 1 in the morning here. Selling Flobies,
well,
and
if,
then I...
if you were on this coast, it wouldn't have been so late, now would it?
I wasn't nearly as big a loser on the West Coast last night. There you go. All right. Mary in San Jose, disappointed in Mama last night. Steph, what happened to you? When did you decide to support the Afghani troop increase? I did a Scooby-Doo. I couldn't believe my ears. I heard you were against the increase in the morning on your show, and then there you are on Ed's show supporting Obama, huh? I don't believe I was against the troop increase yesterday morning. I had questions, like a lot of people, and then I, like Jim, was impressed with the president's speech, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. That's all. Jeez. All right. And besides, of course I'll say whatever I have to get on TV. Don't be ridiculous.
You always have.
Oh, I'm kid. Wow, can I have some hate letter music? This one's mean. Jan writes, by the way, the guy that owns the show that's trying to kill me for the life insurance money,
mm-hmm.
He just called me a warmonger. Earlier, I guess he's not on my side either. Whatever.
No, I guess that makes kind of all three of us warmongers, doesn't it?
I guess so. Okay, Jan writes, wow, check you out. That stupid little Republican USC girl you used to be has just been waiting to come out again. How nice that you and your idiotic Republican mother can now be on the same page. People like you are ruining everything with your willful head-up-your-ass ignorance. I'm ruining everything?
You're ruining Desperate Housewives?
Now we can't have nice things, any of us, because of me. You've learned nothing in all the years you've done this show. It's all about you, huh, Steph? You just want to be pretty and famous and not think too much. Well, good luck with that. Oh, well, thank you, Jan. I with a lot of hair and makeup, I can try, but, oof. I need some of that world's strongest beer now after that letter. There is a, just in time for the holidays, did you hear about this? A
no.
Controversial Scottish brewery has launched what it described as the world's strongest beer, 32% alcohol
Woo-hoo.
Content.
Oh, my God.
Woo-hoo!
64 proof.
Do they make a light version?
Oh, what's this, the malted liquor? What gets you drunker, quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer.
Can't get enough of it.
Beer.
How we really love it.
Beer.
Makes me think I'm a man.
Beer.
I could kiss and hug it.
Beer.
But I'd rather chug it.
Beer.
Cup of deli out to here.
Beer.
I could not refuse
beer.
A, I could really use a
beer.
All right, you know, in all the hubbub, Jim, over the president's big speech last night, he gave another speech, which also landed in Beaver Stack, which I think is important. President cements place in Beaver Nation. Obama gives a Beaver pep talk in the Oval Office.
Oh, really?
Fill in your own Bill Clinton joke here. Before their victory in D.C. President Obama has supported the Oregon State men's basketball program from the moment his brother-in-law, Craig Robinson, was hired as head coach. Now Obama has officially joined the ranks of Beaver Nation.
Nice beaver.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Obama was able to watch Robinson coach the Beavers in person. Oof. president doesn't want to get caught on tape watching that. As soon as I signed up for this, he's always been a part of the Beaver Nation, said Robinson.
Really?
Obama was well aware of the Beavers' early struggles. Yeah, boy,
oh,
howdy.
Yeah, oof.
He proceeded to give them an impromptu pep talk. He gave the Beavers a pep talk, and they came around.
Hmm.
All right.
Does Michelle know about this?
Somehow puts me in the mood for hump days with Hal.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
The hump days.
Hump days with Hal Sparks.
Yes! Yes!
Hi, Hal.
Hi.
Thank you for taking your shirt off on Skype for me.
Oh, you're welcome. It was like prison cam. It was like it's like they took away our conjugal visits based on something I did before. And so, but I get them back, you know, because I'm going to be in studio with you next week in New York.
Oh, that's what I hear.
It's true.
By the way, some people think this is just shtick. Hal actually did take his shirt off for me on the Skype camera.
I did.
So there, girls. Hi.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking pretty live these days. It's a good time. Yeah, you wait. Wait till you see it in person. It's even better. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We get.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is this going out over the air? Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, yes. Uh-huh. You party crasher, you.
That washcloth comment only went out over the steps.
Good. Thing. Thank you. Good. Right.
There's a story Mama told about.
No. Don't repeat it.
Don't repeat it. Yeah, but we don't think you told it on the air. We think you only told it during the commercial break.
No, don't repeat it.
Okay.
Just let it be ours. That's for us.
Okay. Hal, what did you think of the big speech last night?
I thought it was great, and I think that lack of exuberance that the right is complaining about, I think largely comes from the fact that he had to do the thing holding his nose. This is a policy that had a lot of necessity to it that he would have rather not had to deal with. It's kind of like, you know, if you were cleaning up, a friend comes over to your house drunk, pukes all over your bathroom, and you have to clean it up. There's never a point during that cleaning process where you go, awesome! And I think that's the right can't understand why it wouldn't be awesome to clean up after George Bush. And the idea of not coming, you know, of pulling out, you know, and you know, the lack of manliness of that act, as Carlin has stated before, affects them, because I don't think they actually, to them, a move into a country is not to win a war at all. Mm-hmm. It's imperialism. It's flat out old fashioned American, you know, Project for a New American Century style imperialism. We go there, we stay. That just like we stay, we're in Korea, we're in Japan, we're in Okinawa, we're in Germany. We're going to stay here, and we're going to keep our bases. We're going to keep forever. That's how they want it to go. So they're never going to like the idea of any kind of drawdown. And that's why they're complaining, because it's not just a strategic problem. It really is their overall kind of national foreign policy and war theory. This is how they want to live. They want to. We're supposed to expand into other countries, own them by proxy, and then move into other ones. And that's, I mean, if you look at their war plan, every time they've been in office, that's exactly what they do.
And destroy their health care plans, too.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Can we do that for them, too?
Well, landmines will do that.
Yeah. Senator Russ Feingold yesterday.
Well, action can include, obviously, not permitting funding. For additional troops, it can include resolutions for time frames to withdraw troops, as many of us have worked on together with regard to Iraq, and other approaches that we'd be open to. But as far as I'm concerned, everything would be on the table in terms of trying to prevent this error from occurring.
You know, you have to give credit to some on the left, like my future husband, Russ Feingold, for consistency. They're against the war when Bush was doing it, and they're against war now.
Absolutely. I think, you know, again, that's also a strategic point overall as well. When you know, on the far left end of the spectrum, which I certainly have a much more comfortable time leaning towards, is the idea that we shouldn't have been there in the first place. And that thought alone tends to hold people to the thought of every decision we make going forward. I totally agree with it. But it's, you're stuck in, you know, that where it becomes the middle is, we're there, we're this involved, how do we get out safely and still achieve some element of strategy, which is the mountains between Afghanistan and Pakistan, which are the problem area? And do you leave the Taliban to regrow in Afghanistan and then move south into Pakistan where they've got nukes? That's the big issue. And I think that's the one element of this where he feels like he can't let go. Like I said, I don't think he was ever in the Oval Office going over all the possibilities and plans for this. And you really get a feeling that he did. Going, oh, that would be cool if we could do that. Like, none of it. None of it's good. It's just an ugly necessity at this point. And
yeah, I don't think it was like the – what was that one meeting, Jim? Remember that it was reported that the president – Bush just stuck his head in mm-hmm. a meeting and said, we're taking Saddam out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and then he closed the door like on laughing. He just like opened the
right,
door.
Yeah.
Just,
it was Alan Seuss.
Yeah, and then a plank hit one of the other guys like hee-haw in the butt. And they danced a jig and then ran off into a corner. Yeah, that's you know, that's my biggest issue with this. Is you come in, it's like any kind of cleanup. A real cleanup begins with taking everything out of the space, mm-hmm. looking at it for what it really is, and putting it back.
What do you do when you know we're kind of in bizarro world, Helen? Yeah. That you know, like I think the RNC sent someone out to praise the president's mm-hmm. decision on Afghanistan, and some Democrats are campaigning against Obama's Afghanistan plan, particularly people running like for Ted Kennedy's old seat. Congressman Mike, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Capuano, said he recalled his vote against authorizing the war in Iraq, and he said now there's a call for more troops in Afghanistan, but the questions remain. What's our mission? How do we define success? What's our exit strategy? Without the right answers to those questions, I will never vote to send more of our sons and daughters to war, never.
Well, I think the problem is you're not fighting against Japan or Germany circa 1941. You know, this is a much more amorphous circumstance that we're in, and an area, quite frankly, where the borders were created by the Europeans and the British, hundreds of years ago. This is like all of this is arbitrary to start with. It's like the Aboriginal boundaries in Australia. They don't pay attention to it because they don't care.
Right. He makes it respond, you guys, to this one point, though. He said it's about to turn into somehow bringing democracy to Afghanistan, somehow protecting a corrupt regime, and I don't understand why that mission is good. It wasn't good in Iraq. It won't be good in Afghanistan. It won't be good in any place in this world.
I'll tell you why, because I think that's an assumption made, and I also think that's the PR's expression of what the mission should be mm-hmm. so that people over here can digest it.
Right.
The truth is, over there, that's not really what's going on at all. We've got some dark missions that are being played out.
That's what I've been saying.
Exactly, in the hills that need to be done, and it's unfortunate that they're there, but that's what those 100 Al-Qaeda they keep talking about are all about. It's a fairly refined group, and it's the sprawl with the Taliban that's the problem. If the Al-Qaeda leader's
right,
there...
I really do get the impression, like I say, right or wrong, the president is trying to solve the problem now.
Yeah, and it's an ugly problem.
With Bush, it was like whiplash. Remember, we got to stop the smoke of the mushroom cloud.
Right.
We gotta bring freedom, the fires of freedom. We gotta stand up so they can stand up.
Right.
We gotta fight them over there so we can fight them.
Which they like.
What? The hell are we doing?
Right. Which is what the right liked about that. They liked the abstractness of that conversation. It just sounds like a bunch of bumper stickers, and there's no real mission to be spoken of. Obama came out with look, this is unfortunate that we're in this circumstance, and we can't just leave it the way it is and split. So here's my attempt at compromise. Again, the worry about sending more troops that we keep bringing up, that everybody was saying, originally there was a request of 60 to 80,000 troops initially. Now it's, 30,000 is what you're going to send over a certain amount of, over the next 6 months. Again, it's not the number. We tend to get focused on the number. This is an escalation. One of the plans that McChrystal and those guys were pushing was taking groups of 5,000 troops and putting them in along the border more spread out. And that's the problem right now for the soldiers that are there, is that they've got no backup. They clear an area, then they walk into another ambush. They clear that.
Like some kind of crazy Red Rover.
Exactly, right.
Fill in the gap.
Yeah.
Senator John McCain echoing what a lot on the right are saying, Hal, that it's almost like winning means never leaving.
Right.
I have been concerned about initial reports that there will be a date for withdrawal. I think those dates for withdrawal are dictated by conditions. The way that you win wars is to break the enemy's will, not to announce dates that you are leaving.
Like Vietnam.
I am pleased that we are sending an additional 30,000 troops, apparently, and there is a strategy that for the military action that I think will succeed, modeled on the surge in Iraq.
Sure.
Just like when
that's all they ever
in Vietnam.
Offensive.
Right.
They think the answer to every problem is more troops.
Sure.
Don't they?
Well,
more troops, more war.
Right. We broke the Vietnamese spirit. That's why.
Yes,
that's why we're so successful there. Staying longer and pushing harder was what really made
militarily, the Tet Offensive was a disaster for the Viet Cong. But
all it did was strengthen their resolve in a lot of ways. And you put in a situation like that. Look at Japan and Germany. This was a very distinct. It was a country we were fighting against.
Exactly.
You could actually separate the will of the people from the will of their government.
And you knew when you won because the government threw in the
wrote
towel.
A piece of paper.
Yes. You win.
Said
right,
it, yes,
exactly.
Or
all
killed
right,
themselves.
20 minutes after the hour. Oh, I've gotten
removed
another,
Argentina.
I've got another message on my machine from Tiger Woods. We'll
open
that for you and dive into Celebrity Stack. Whole hog on Hump Days with Hal as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
And now, here's something we hope you'll really like.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, mid the Hump Days with Hal.
Mm-hmm.
25 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Keith in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show on the Tiger Woods, unpleasantness.
Well, good morning, goddess.
Good morning, Keith.
I have a point I'd like to make. You asked earlier about Tiger Woods, why would he cheat on a woman who is as beautiful as his wife is?
Yes.
It's the
Hugh Grant, what were you thinking question, yes.
I'll tell you what he was thinking.
George Burns, long, long ago when he wrote his autobiography, he told of his transgressions against Gracie Allen where he fooled around with other women, and a lot of people just couldn't understand why on earth would you fool around with someone as beautiful and as wonderful as Gracie Allen because, you know, she was one of America's sweethearts. And he pointed out that somebody who may have been married to Bridget Bardot or Marilyn Monroe, as long as he was married to Gracie, would still... want to try something else because eventually you look for a little bit of variety. Now, as a person who never, ever in their life would ever get a chance to experience the caliber of woman that
right.
as Stephanie Miller is,
yummy.
I don't get it either. And before I go, I have one question.
Well, I think Jim Ward summed it up pretty well because he can. It's the same reason the dog licks his because he can.
Well, yeah, in L.A., there's always that thing that you're only as faithful as your options. You know what I mean? There's a lot of monogamous, ugly people is the idea, you know.
And, thanks for calling, Keith. I don't know if that's just an L.A. thing.
I think we actually refined it.
Yeah, right.
We didn't invent it, but we kind of clarified the message. That's what, you know.
Tiger will be charged with careless driving. He faces a $164 fine.
Ooh, that's hard.
And his wife will make him pay for the rest of his life.
No, she won't. she's a jock's wife. I mean, ultimately, that they have secret societies, the wives of...
It kind
of
comes with the territory.
Yeah. And even though it's golf...
One of Tiger Woods' mistresses, apparently, allegedly, mm-hmm. was also with Derek Jeter, and who's the other sports
right.
guy?
Well,
I don't know.
There are sports groupies.
He called her once and told her he had a bad dream that she was having sex with both of them, with two other famous jocks.
Wow, and it was true. She's psychic. Psychic groupies. No. That's awesome.
No, she had been with them previously. And
he knew about it. So he was... that's interesting. So that was a selling point for him.
Hmm. Yeah, what do they call those girls? The jock straps?
Sluts?
Something.
Jock straps?
Something.
Athletic supporters.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Okay. 10 minutes after the hour. Oh, there's breaking Bridget Loves Maybe Bernie. Hmm. As
oh,
we
yes.
continue
no,
with Celebrity
she's,
Stack
yeah.
on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Not breaking.
And Representative
broke.
John Yarmuth of Kentucky is next, too.
My yeah. home state.
That's right.
Stephanie Miller.
I sent it to the bar.
You don't send a woman with no underwear and that much makeup to the bar.
It is the Stephanie
Wanda knows
Miller
you.
Show.
Yes, Wanda does know you.
33 minutes after the hour. Oh, Tiger Woods left another message on my machine, Chris. Where did I put that? Damn it. We're just getting all the technical set up here.
It's Tiger.
Oh, hi.
I need you to do me a huge favor.
Okay.
Can you please take your name off your phone. My wife went through my phone and maybe calling you.
Uh-oh.
So if you can, please take your name off that and, just have it as a number on the voicemail. Just have it as your telephone number. Okay, you gotta do this for me. Dude, quickly. Alright, bye.
This isn't being recorded, is it?
Oh, damn it!
By the way, you don't have one of those old-fashioned things that actually records this, right?
No!
All right.
Who leaves a message? Don't exactly. Leave a message. Call me back immediately.
Especially if you're that much of a celebrity and that private.
It's me, Tiger Woods, the golfer.
Yeah. You know, last week when we were... You're recording this? Oh!
Oh, damn it. All right. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Do we have Congressman Don Yarmouth of the great state of...
Commonwealth.
Good morning, Congressman.
Commonwealth. Yes, it's
Commonwealth.
I had not heard that yet.
Oh, yes.
Yikes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I know, and I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, and it wasn't a Republican? I know. So, Congressman, what's your take on the speech last night?
Well, I think he made the case that he had to make to justify the policy that he has chosen. So I think he did a good job of explaining why he was doing what he was doing. I think I would have gone in a different direction. Going back kind of to the golf metaphor, there's something in golf called risk reward. You know, you talk about what's when you're contemplating a shot, what's the benefit of taking the risk? And that's what I can't put my arms around with Afghanistan. How you can even conceive of a sufficient reward to justify the cost that we're going to be paying. And that's my big problem. I pray along with everybody else that this works, but I agree with everybody who's looked at this that there are no good options there. But again,
It's like Tiger when you're in a sand trap or when you're thinking, would she find out if I had three or four mistresses? Should I stop now? How much risk?
Well, he said he's not perfect. There was a book out a few years ago called Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. So I guess he's just proven that.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, again, I don't know why we're using, like sports figures as our moral dipstick, as it were. You know, I don't know why I'm supposed to care. Good for you, I'm sad for you. It's up to you.
A famous athlete did what?
Right, exactly.
Anyway, Congressman, you said, I would go a different way. What way would you go on Afghanistan if you were president?
I think I would have limited any involvement to training the Afghan troops and gotten the hell out of there, except for that, and focused on Pakistan. I've sat through five or six different briefings by supposed experts in the area, in that region, and they all accept the same fact pattern, and every one of them came up with a different idea as to what we should do. And I'm sure that's what the president heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Not an easy problem.
No, it's
Congressman,
ridiculous.
Speaking of not an easy problem, health care, as you know, a lot of these Republicans are like, we can't afford health care. We have to pay for endless war. But, you have folks like you and Senator Bernie Sanders the other day. I want your take on Bernie Sanders saying this on the Senate floor.
I would be very reluctant to support legislation that did not have a strong public option.
Obviously, that's one of the what's going to happen here. You've got people like him saying, "I'm not going to vote, for anything that doesn't have it." And then, we've got our conservative friends that say, conservative Democrats say they won't vote for anything that it's in it. Is that going to be the breaking point?
Well, if everybody draws a line in the sand, then we're not going to get anything, and that's not going to be helpful. And I think what's interesting to me about all the data that's come out, all the projections over the last few days that have come out, show that even with a very weak public option, there is a huge benefit to the American people in terms of their ongoing health care costs, which we all expected. So just imagine what it would be if we actually had a robust public option that actually force some competition, which projections are this is not going, the one that's in the Senate bill is not going to. So,
and you're still dealing with the Senator Mitch McConnells of the world that keep telling lies like this.
So a bill that's being sold as a way to reduce costs actually drives them up.
Which is completely untrue. I know the Congressional Budget Office just released a report saying the president is right. The people's premiums will go down.
The facts have a liberal bias.
And the other thing that's not being talked about is that only relates to premiums. which is not the only cost that the American people bear when their health care is concerned. There is a huge, you know, their deductibles, their co-pays, and what the CBO said was that under the Senate plan, and I assume in our plan would be even greater saving, that 72% of the cost of health care would be paid for, as opposed to 60% under the current situation. So there's an additional 20% of savings that's related to deductibles and copays and all, you know, the no-cost preventive care and so forth. So the actual savings is under, and somebody said what it would, even when you calculate the subsidies, would save 50 to 60% on their health care costs. Mm-hmm. So there are enormous savings for most Americans in this bill.
Congressman, my life is essentially like a child in the back seat, and then I talk to various congresspeople like you in the front seat, where I just keep saying the same question over and over again. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we going to get there on health care?
You know, I'm real optimistic that we're going to get there. I think they're making real headway over there. They've got, I think the Republicans are maybe hedging their bets a little bit. They've backed off on some of their parliamentary delay tactics. They're not offering torrents of amendments to try and slow down the process. They're using a few techniques, but basically I think they're acting pretty cautiously. They're negotiating now with Susan Collins. They've got Tom Carper from Delaware working on a new version of the public option that they think might get some more votes. So as far as I'm concerned, if they can get anything out of the Senate by Christmas, We're in really good shape, because we'll have a conference and
they've worn me down. I'll settle for anything at this point.
Yeah, exactly. and I think they will have set the floor. We haven't necessarily set the ceiling, but I think they will have set the floor, so there's nowhere to go but up.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think we'll be okay, because once the Senate bill passes, then people are going to say, when it comes to final passage on that conference report, am I going to vote against the Medicare of my generation? And I don't think a lot of people are.
Right. Or as Olympia Snow says, when history calls, are you going to answer?
Exactly right.
And I'm just grateful that when Stephanie Miller calls, you answer. Representative John Yarmuth of the great state of Kentucky, thank you so much, Congressman.
Always a pleasure, Stephanie. Take care.
You too, sir. Mm-hmm. There he goes. From Hal Sparks' home state
of
Kentucky.
It's true. Home Commonwealth.
It's still not officially a state. I don't think the rest of the country won't agree on it.
There are four commonwealths in the United States.
Exactly.
Yep.
Which sounds like a really socialist word, doesn't it?
I know.
It's amazing to me that all of them are basically, are essentially red states, I think.
Well, Virginia, that's kind of a purplish state.
Well, I mean, it's got the CIA in it.
Let's dive back into the celebrity stack. Hal, have you seen the party crashers, the White House party crashers?
Yeah,
I know
that
they've been on TV complaining about how much attention they're getting over all this.
Yeah, yeah.
Here is Tariq Salal
with Balloon Boy Family.
Yeah.
Yes. Tariq.
This has been the most devastating thing that's ever happened to us. We're greatly saddened by all the circumstances that have been involved in portraying my wife and I as
idiots.
Party crashers. And I can tell you, we did not party crash the White House.
Well, then what was that?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
We got in without...
No, state dinner is totally where reality stars, wannabe reality stars, should be.
You hear the president and Michelle were pissed. Gibbs said they were angry, so was the Secret Service.
Next on State Dinner Crashes.
Yeah.
Bravo was already working on that series. You kidding me?
Right.
Yeah, I love this. Gibbs says, well, look, these guys, the Secret Service, they do a great, tremendous job protecting the president and his family, except for that one time. Which, as Jim knows, all it takes is one time, unfortunately. So this is a little bit...
Well, the upside is that this one time was pretty innocuous, and you can bet that the law was laid down pretty heavily. And things have tightened up immensely, which is probably a good thing in that regard. You know,
Here is Michaela Sahali, up for Desperate D.C. Housewives or whatever that reality show is, but they may be going a different direction at this point.
We were invited, not crashers, and there isn't anyone that would have the audacity or the poor behavior to do that.
Except for you.
And some of the Republican congressional representatives keep trying to show up at things that...
Wouldn't it have been funny if the little balloon boy just, just popped his head in the screen on Today Show and threw up just briefly?
Wouldn't it be really funny if these two people hadn't had the last name Salahi? And, of all the people to break through, it's not like Roy Stevenson and his wife Marge. Sure. It was like they have to
Tariq Salahi.
These are the people who can manage to sneak in with...
trying to get a reality show that got all this attention, and now they said, this has been devastating.
Oh, God.
Our lives have been destroyed.
Please, leave us alone. Leave us alone.
It's not like we want to be on television letting people know it every moment of our lives.
We've told our
publicist we want to be left alone. I mean,
right. Where's your publicist? She said we should be out here saying it ourselves.
What's her name?
Michaela.
She told Matt Lauer, our lives have been destroyed. Everything we've worked for me, 44 years, just destroyed. What have they been working for? To get on TV?
Yes.
Now they're on TV. What have you worked for?
Bravo wasn't on 40 years ago.
Yeah. And then here's my favorite final punchline. They're being hounded by the press and the paparazzi.
Oh, cry me a river. I was on TMZ last night.
Were you really?
I was.
What's his name? Tariq. Yes. He told Matt Lauer, completely blind to the irony, our homes are being invaded. Damn it, we're trying to get a reality show to invade our homes. Where are you people?
What about the people's house that you invaded?
Right, yeah.
Hal, why were you on TMZ last night?
I was, it's a dual hit. Well, on the one hand, I was tweet stalked by a bunch of fans.
Okay. And you were doing Tiger's Wife.
Yes, exactly. I was actually eating with a friend at Swingers, and a big group of girls were like tweet stalking me. They're like, "We're outside watching At House Parks," you know. And then I saw that they were doing it, and I tweeted them back, and I came outside, and we got a picture taken. It was like me and eight or I think it was eight these girls, and there was a dude from TMZ out there filming or whatever, and. Not realizing he was from TMZ, I didn't beat him up, and so I, kind of talked to this guy for a minute. And earlier this year, I challenged the entire cast of TMZ to a fight. Because of some of their transgressions in the past, and the fact that I think Harvey Levin is basically a professional peeping Tom, and a scumbag, and he keeps saying he's a lawyer and he doesn't litigate anything. A lawyer who keeps saying that would, I don't know, help the underprivileged and just go, I do a lot of pro bono work. He doesn't. This guy peeps through people's windows and drives young actors to drink. So the hell with him. So I challenged the entire cast to a fight. And they made it look like I challenged this guy Dax on the show to a fight or whatever. And I went, and for the record, that's not true. I challenged the entire cast all together at once to a fight. So.
Glad we've cleared that up.
Yes, thank you.
45 minutes after the hour. Once again, the Stephanie Miller Show for clearing up your personal
thank
record.
Thank you, yes.
In my 45 minutes after the hour. Right back with more Hump Days with Hal. Continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ooh, even I found that to be in bad taste.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show. 50 minutes after the hour, the Dow is down 10 points. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. We are knee-deep in Hump Days with Hal.
Yeah.
Hal.
Mm-hmm. You betcha. Wait till next week.
What?
Chris in California went to school with one of the White House party crashers.
Sweet.
Hello, Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you guys this morning?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. His name is Tarek, by the way. That's how you pronounce it. I went to school with him, and he had the funny thing that nobody's mentioning is that his father was somehow involved as a diplomat. He had a free walk out of all classes and exams whenever he wanted to. He would just take off and disappear.
So the irony is that he used to not show up, and now he's making up for lost time.
He sure is. And I just remember I went to, I lived next door to him, went to the store with him one time, and these were the old-fashioned stores. And so when the meat counter actually just had price stickers on it, he would take the little, like, you know, reserve cut and stick it over the $40 part so it only looked like $3.92. So I told him I said, I'm never coming to the store with you again. So,
all right, thank you, Chris.
He was a little bit of a scam artist then, and it sounds like he really hasn't changed much. He's also, you know, he's complaining about all this fanfare. Everybody in the wine industry knows that he's in, you know, tons and tons of lawsuits. He sued his mother. I don't know what happened to his father.
Oh, my
he
God.
He sued his mother over the estate. Yeah,
wow.
Go to winebusiness.com and look it up. It's quite a scam. So.
Wow. All right, thank you, Chris. Hey, speaking of a scam, have you guys heard that Sarah Palin, you know, she has that big-ass bus?
Right.
That
yeah.
She's apparently,
that she's not
you know,
on
she's,
for more yeah, than 10
she's
minutes?
She's one of you. You know, she's just like me, Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's flying on a Gulfstream jet from stop mm-hmm. to stop, and then they put her on the bus at the last second,
yeah.
so she
yeah,
can call down home.
With the initials,
the people.
With the initials of her name in the call number on the plane itself.
Oh, no.
So that it's not like a big Sarah Palin plane, but it's her little wink.
Yeah.
You know, you betcha, I got a plane. Yeah. It's the like 71401SB or SP. Yeah.
In other celebrity news, by the way, David Hasselhoff insists he's healthy and happy. He just spent 2 days in Cedars-Sinai receiving treatment for something that, that has made him healthy and
alcohol-related humanity.
The news reports are that he had a seizure.
Oh.
Yes, he
so,
says.
Completely healthy yes. and happy seizure.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Yes, that kind.
Shiny, okay. happy seizure. So.
he threw up a seizure salad.
Right.
Drinking too much.
Well, Jerry's Deli's right across the street.
Can I just tell you, as we've had George Takei on the show several times, I love the Star Trek man fights. I really do. William Shatner has said he's given up on trying to make peace with his bitter former Star Trek co-stars.
What did I do? To make the field this way.
Well, Captain.
Well, you're a giant flaming a-hole, for one, apparently. There's that.
You didn't come to my wedding.
You didn't invite me.
We set
he
one out.
He insists that most of his efforts to mend the relationship have been in vain. He's finished trying to be friends with his former colleagues. He said, I've asked them numerous times to see if I can assuage their bitterness. I don't know what their problem is. He said, I don't like any ill feeling. But if there's anything I could do to correct it, I would. It seems like nothing works.
Just because I copped a feel when I was kissing Michelle Nichols, see. I felt a grudge against
me. Let it go.
If I told you you had
a
beautiful body,
you never copped
a
feel with me, Captain. That's what I'm upset about.
I'm afraid you would have liked it.
Oh, my.
All right.
You know he picked that up from you, right?
Now it's time for your dueling Alec Baldwins. Alec Baldwin says he will retire when his contract expires or 30 Rock is canceled in 2012. He said he considers his entire movie career a complete failure.
It's been a complete failure. I just want to go on selling my sweaty balls.
Yeah, because Glengarry Glenn Ross was such a terrible
yeah, that
movie
such
and
a
not worth seeing.
Set of steak knives.
What he means is blockbuster movies, because the next like really nice indie film, you know, from somebody like Mammoth that comes along with it's like a great theater piece turned into,
right.
He'll be in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one retires
but
from the arts.
Give up the Jack Ryan franchise?
Yes, he did. He quit after The Hunt for Red October.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Katie Holmes is defending Suri Cruz's high heel fetish.
Oh, kids wear stuff.
And heels are
yeah,
good,
she's daddy's
hold
girl.
Hold on. Yeah, oh, ouch. Yeah.
Jim Louise Ward.
Most cross-dressers are straight. So,
she says she's like every other little girl. She loves my high heels. Well, she's like every other little girl that'll end up with scoliosis if she's going to be wearing high heels at age whatever she is. All right.
A lot of, like, having raised a little girl till she was 6 years old and gone through all the phases, like... If people had a camera on most of the kids that were, you know, beyond the YouTube short videos that we see of children being, you know, there would just be so much dissection of the growth of a child just because of all the phases they go through and what kids decide
and what they
like.
Out, they,
I wore a Jughead crown to school for a year.
You did not!
I did. I made it myself out of cardboard and tinfoil.
And that was your trademark.
For second grade. I wore it all of second grade.
All right. You know what? I'm, as you guys know, in New York, I'm very excited because Broadway, as it turns out, does go for booze and dope.
Oh, good.
And I can't wait to go see a show. You know my favorite, Mamma Mia. And now,
oh, God.
Feast
oh, no.
of my heart, Chris. ABBA World is opening. ABBA World.
It's
in London next month. ABBA World will have 25 rooms of memorabilia with fans getting the chance to join the band on stage as part of a 3D holographic installation.
Wow.
You know, once you start playing ABBA songs...
Oh, God. My ears are bleeding already.
You cannot get it out all day long. And then when you hit Waterloo, you've gone too far. Then there's no going back after that.
Man. You certainly went through a certain window of time during your sexual growth, didn't you?
You went through your sexual growth
right
to this song.
This song.
Right.
I did most of my dry huffing to bread. What? Oh, did I say that out loud?
No.
I'm sorry.
Wow. Yeah, but this is where you really came into your own. It's like the reason why I could not figure out why my grandfather wore a sailor's cap and a members-only jacket all his life. And then I realized, oh, in his teen years, he kind of looked like Humphrey Bogart, and that's what got him laid. So he's stuck with that look forever.
All right. If you would like to find out, don't tweet stalk Hal Sparks, but if you would
you
like
can,
to follow
at Hal Sparks.
Him.
And the new HalSparks.com is now online, and you can choose your own skin for it. It's yin or yang.
Awesome.
It's a good time. I'm very forward-thinking.
All right.
Egonomic.
We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie
And I'll see you
show.
Next
Thank
week.
You.
Yummy. If a picture paints a thousand words.